working? Uplink? Satellite? Microphones? Great. Hello. Welcome to this version, edition of the Mike Malloy Show. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, we'll be starting two very important events. The new neo-fascist Congress is being sworn in, and we will begin our reading of Brave New World. So be prepared for a very tumultuous day. Speaking of tumultuous days, a judge has dismissed the cases against military veterans and anti-war activists following that action December 16th in front of the White House. Remember that? Let's see, it says here, anti-war military veterans and other activists celebrated a breakthrough victory today in D.C. Superior Court when charges were dropped following arrests in front of the White House on December 16th. Over 131 people were arrested in a major veteran-led protest while participating in nonviolent civil resistance in a driving snowstorm. U.S. Park Police charged all 131 protesters with, quote, failure to obey a lawful order, end quote, when they refused to move. Among those arrested, Chris Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, Ray McGovern, Margaret Flowers. 42 arrested opted to appear in court and go to trial, with the first group appearing in D.C. Superior Court on January 4th. That would be today, right? Is this January 4th? Right. Prosecutors from the D.C. Attorney General's office stated that the government, quote, declined to file charges due to missing or incomplete police paperwork. Son of a bitch. Really? Missing paperwork. Why not just admit that to arrest veterans and human rights activists in front of the White House exercising their First Amendment right was a big mistake? No, no. No, no, can't do that. No, 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 no. Paperwork. Missing paperwork. Oh, my God. Oh, well, whatever. You know, a rose is a rose is a rose. The presiding judge confirmed that the cases were dropped and the defendants were free to leave. Now, those who participated in the action, and it wasn't me, I wasn't there, and neither were you, for our various and sundry reasons, but the people who were there issued a statement. This is what it said. Quote, this is clearly a victory for opposition to undeclared wars, which are illegal under international law, have led to the destruction of societies in Iraq and Afghanistan, bled the U.S. Treasury in a time of recession, and caused human rights violations against civilians and combatants. Many of us will return to Washington, D.C. to support an action on Tuesday, January 11th. To protest the continued use of Guantanamo detention facility, including torture of detainees in violation of international law. The defendants were represented by blah, 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 Wilcox and Mark Goldstone. Wilcox stated, quote, clearly the government and police felt that these veterans and their supporters acted with the courage of their convictions and did not wish to spend the time and funds necessary for a trial proceeding. This is a major victory for the peace movement. So charges were dismissed because, according to prosecutors from the D.C. Attorney General's office, the government, quote, declined to file charges due to missing or incomplete police paperwork. I mean, do you have any doubt that the language of newspeak is the lingua franca? Is that right? In these times? Missing paperwork. Not. We are embarrassed. We, the government, are shamed into dropping charges. No, 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 no. Of course not that. Missing paperwork, you weaselly bastards. Speaking of weaselly bastards, in New York, Glenn Beck is being thrown off the radio because of low ratings. And in Philadelphia, understand, too. WOR, which is just a right-wing cesspool anyway. WOR said today it is canceling Beck's program as of January 17th and replacing him with another syndicated talk show host, Mike Gallagher. That's according to New York Daily News, which is owned by the Murdoch terrorist publishing and broadcast empire. WR program director Scott Lakefield told the Daily News. No, wait, the Post. He owns the Post, not the Daily News. That's right. He owns the Post, the terrorist, Rupert Murdoch. The program director at WR told the Daily News, quote, "The reason is ratings. Somewhat to our surprise, the show wasn't getting what we wanted." Well, I tell you what, Glenn, there's a way you can save your ratings. Go on the air tomorrow and blow your goddamn brains out. That'll get your ratings back. Well, momentarily. You know, maybe these people that are predicting, when is Jesus coming back? May 12th? Is it? You didn't write it down?
I need to add it to my Google calendar.
Oh, my God.
I've just been lazy. It's sometime this spring, probably shortly around Easter.
Can't you put it in that useless chunk of telephone you have?
It would be Easter. You hate my cell phone.
I hate your phone. I hate all that crap on there. You know, all these little, you know what I have? I have a flip phone.
There's an
you
app for
you open
that.
It up, you talk. You close it, and you stop talking.
You know, there's probably a Rapture app.
A Rapture app?
I'm sure
there is.
There's probably an app for that.
Rapture.com.
Figure out exactly, yeah, what you should wear.
Those people are out of their goddamn minds. I have never read more hysterical stuff than to go to those Rapture Ready websites. Oh, my God. I'm shaving my armpits because Jesus is coming back. And I'm going to have to get a bikini cut. What do you call that? A bikini what?
Wax.
Wax.
Brazilian. But, you know, don't you get the new body? I mean, isn't the old one destroyed? I can't figure that out.
Don't try. That way lies madness. Don't try.
You know, Glenn Beck must be plenty steamed that he's being replaced by Gallagher. Seriously. I mean, that's like, I mean, that'd be like if Rush Limbaugh found out that he was being replaced by, I don't know, who's the little bow tie boy? Carlson.
You know, Tucker
who's
gonna Carlson.
Take over his slot or something.
Oh, man. Oh, well. That's just the way it goes in the wonderful world of radio, right? Now, getting to what I wanted to say, or what I was trying to get to, is the Rapture Ready freaks may know something. Not Rapture, but the return of Jesus. Jesus, they say, huh?
Well, is there a difference?
Jesus
comes back and then there's a
rapture.
No.
The rapture's supposed to happen first or second. I don't know. But the rapture and the return of Jesus are two different things. Anyway, two or three events in the past several days would lead one, if one were borderline insane, that is, if one were religious, would lead one to believe that something is afoot with the great sky spook. Something is afoot. I'll share that with you when we come back after this break. Did I say who's sponsoring this hour? I didn't. Oh, my God. This hour is sponsored by Carol Schenker. Her message, start the new year with strength, truth seekers, resist fascism, take to the streets, fight for your country while you can. Peace, Carolyn Buck in Canada. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. I made a mistake. Carol and Buck are sponsoring the second hour. The first hour is sponsored by Robin Horton. And he writes, the Puget Sound Peace Presence is a true peace organization and a new approach that's dedicated to making peace be present in the everyday lives of people living all around the Puget Sound and to create an effective political force opposing militarism, which is more rampant today than it was when the original peace communities first formed in the 60s and 70s. All right. Robin Horton is our first hour sponsor. Thank you, Robin. All right. Signs that the apocalypse may be here. Maybe these people are... Here's the first one. Hundreds of people apparently were exposed to hepatitis A when they took communion at a Catholic church on New Year's, on Christmas Day on Long Island in New York. Hundreds of people. The Nassau County Health Department officials say anyone who attended the 10:30 a.m. or noon services at, you're not going to believe the name of the church, Our Lady of Lourdes Church. Is that irony or what, folks? In Massapequa, may have been exposed to the virus, which is not as dangerous as hepatitis B or C, but can cause severe flu-like symptoms. Now, this is so typical of the this mega business empire that is the Catholic Church. Sound like Goldman Sachs here. Officials won't release the name of the person who tested positive for the virus, but they say it was a clergy member. They're offering vaccines to people who attended the two masses. Health Department in New York said, quote, an individual tested positive for hepatitis A. The individual is involved in the communion process. An estimated 1,300 people attended the services. The health department spokeswoman said, quote, we know there's a potential that exposure could have happened. However, we think the risk is relatively low. Boom, 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 boom. Hepatitis A can spread when those infected haven't properly washed their hands after, you know, going poo-poo and then handle food, making it possible that churchgoers were exposed as they took wine and wafers for communion. Oh, wait, wait, wait. Stop the story. It's not wine and wafers. It is blood and human flesh. Who wrote this? Where did this come from? Whoever it is, they're not Catholic. They don't understand the miracle of transubstantiation. It's not wine and wafer. It's flesh and blood. Right? According to the Centers for Disease Control, symptoms of hepatitis A include fever, fatigue, dark urine, and jaundice, yellowing of the skin. The county health commissioner said, the first thing we want to tell everybody is, do not panic. It happened at Our Lady of Lourdes Church, for God's sake. Okay, that's the first. That's the first example of the apocalypse may be upon us. The second, Kelly in Wellington, Colorado writes, Mike, I'm surprised that more people aren't questioning air quality or talking about pollution. Why? Because dead birds fell from the sky again, this time in Louisiana, 300 miles from the Arkansas incident, right? Kelly writes, these birds hemorrhaged. Isn't that what people were saying would happen with red blood cells after ingesting the Corexit chemical after the Gulf oil spill? Funny, it's almost like people have forgotten. I remember people also saying that it could phase shift at different temperatures. There has been quite a range of temperatures recently. I wonder if the Corexit is now airborne. Happy New Year, Kelly, in Wellington, Colorado. Yeah, birds and fish. 4 days after the 5,000 red-winged blackbirds plunged from the sky over Beebe, Arkansas, 500 more dead birds were found lying lifeless on a quarter-mile-long stretch of highway in Pointe Coupee Parish in Louisiana. Biologists will send some of the birds to labs in Georgia and Wisconsin to conduct necropsies and tests to determine the cause of death. After examining the birds found in Arkansas, state officials concluded that they had died as a result of blunt trauma, possibly caused by flying into buildings in Pointe Coupee Parish. Building? Oh, no, in Arkansas. BB Arkansas has buildings? What, chicken coops? The day before the Arkansas bird deaths were reported, 100,000 drum fish were found dead in a massive fish kill in the Arkansas River. That die-off is still being investigated. Okay, there you go. Make sure you have your bikini wax, girls, because Jesus is coming home. We'll be right back.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It's come through a hole in the air.
Yeah, dead birds.
From those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
25 before the hour, and it's again, this hour is being sponsored by Robin Horton. Exactly, and he writes, the Puget Sound Peace exactly Presence is a true peace organization and a new approach that's dedicated to making peace be present in the everyday lives of people living all around the Puget Sound, and to create an effective political force opposing militarism, which is more rampant today than it was when the original peace communities first formed in the 1960s and 1970s. Puget Sound, for those of you who don't know, of course, is Seattle. Thank you, Robin. This just in, more or less, not really. Do you know, while we're sitting here tonight in Washington, D.C., at a trendy Washington hotel, there is a huge party and fundraiser for 12 incoming freshman members, Republicans, members of Congress, all teabaggers. John Boehner's name is on the invitation. This will be at the W Hotel, where lobbyists, political action committee managers, and others paying the $2,500 ticket price, this is according to Politico.com, will be treated to a performance by country music star Leanne Rimes. Now, if you kick in $50,000, you get a block of 8 tickets and a VIP suite at the W. The Office of Incoming Majority Leader Eric Cantor is another featured invitee. These are people who are going to be guests of the 12 freshman members of Congress, teabaggers all. Hello out there in dumbass world. Hello. Hey, all you Republicans that voted for the teabaggers, guess what? Conservative blogger Matt Lewis writes, quote, if incoming GOP freshmen were hoping to bring fiscal responsibility and family values to Washington, they may have gotten off to an interesting start. Yeah, really. Well, Leanne Rimes, you know, she recently confessed to an extramarital affair, and she recently appeared in a sexy Santa outfit at a gay men's chorus Christmas performance. Son of a bitch. Boy, they don't waste time, do they? Hey, out there in dumbass land, yoo-hoo! Hey, Republicans! Hey, teabaggers! Huh? Here you go! Here's your austerity! Here's your hardworking family values, boys. Ah, there they are. Ah. However, the grumbling that's coming from someplace doesn't seem to have dampened the enthusiasm of the man behind the event. Who is he? Incoming Representative Jeff Denham of California. Aha! He's the guy behind this. Dave Gilliard, a consultant for Denham, said last week, helping the freshmen get reelected is a reelected? The sons of bitches haven't even taken their seat yet. Helping the freshmen get reelected is a project that Denham is very interested in, and of course his own reelection is part of that. It's such a huge freshman class, and that first reelection is the time that you end up losing people. So he really wants to help the majority. That's why he booked Leanne Rimes. I wonder how much Miss Rimes is charging. Huh? Oh, my God. Oh, what else is here? Well, that's all you need to know. That's all I need to know. I don't need to read any more of this crap. Ethics watchdogs raised red flags over Denham's donation of $175,000 from his state campaign account to a charity, quote, quote, that promoted the event in ads featuring Denham. Oh, God. Let me try again. Hello out there in Dumbassville. Hello, Republican dumbasses. Here's your boys. Oh, my God. Republican Dumbassville. What a place to live, huh? Ay, 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 ay. It never fails to amaze me about these Republican voters. They do this every time. They walk into the voting booth. Yes, I'm going to vote out the incumbent, and I'm going to vote for the teabagger who really loves America and really loves the Constitution. And then instead of pulling the lever, they just reach down, take a pistol, and put it to their head and pull the trigger. Same thing. What? Elaine writes, don't forget about the recent earthquakes in Arkansas, too. Well, wait. Who's our friend in Arkansas? You know who. The herbal. Helen Hollers. Alice! Somebody get on the phone and call Alice down in Helen Hollers, Arkansas. Oh, my God. I hope Alice is... Huh? Joyce in Arkansas? Right. But, Helen Hollers, I hope everything's okay down there. Oh, my goodness. Weird times. Weird times indeed. Prairie 2 writes... Regarding the rapture, the Bible is the literal word of God, people. Don't seem to notice that the rapture is not mentioned anywhere in the Bible. If the end times they are orgasmic over actually happens, they will all be left behind with the rest of us to face the particular horsemen allotted to their quarter of the world. God will then judge them only after a horrible death and cast them all into hell for wishing that onto their neighbors. The rapture wasn't invented until 1828 in England and came to the U.S. in 1860. It was supposed to happen in 1830-something, but has been pushed back repeatedly. The rapture! Would that it were true, huh? Did you hear about the U.S.-funded infrastructure projects in Afghanistan and Iraq? What's going on? This is your money, Truth Seeker. Well, mine, too. Roads, canal, this is according to the Washington Post today. Roads, canals, and schools built in Afghanistan as part of a special U.S. military program are crumbling under Afghan stewardship, quote, quote. They don't give a goddamn about roads, canals, and schools. Please. What they care about is beating the living hell out of their slaved, enslaved women. Put your burqa on, however you say that in Pashtun, I don't know. Despite steps imposed over the past year to ensure that Reconstruction money is not being wasted, it's being wasted. U.S. troops in Afghanistan have spent $2 billion on 16,000 humanitarian projects through a program called the Commander's Emergency Response Program, CEERP, which gives a battalion-level commander the power to treat aid dollars as ammunition. Jesus Christ. When you go through Fort Jackson and get your basic training and come out a rifleman, or you are assigned to a rifle company, do they teach you that? Is that when they teach you how to allocate money, or do you do it the way we did it in Iraq? Just bring in flats of millions upon millions of dollars and let these rancid sons of bitches, the contractors, grab it up! Do you know how many fortunes have been made in war historically, going all the way to hell? Go back as far as you want. Alexander the Great. Go be up before that. The Peloponnesian Wars. Whatever you want. Everybody makes a lot of money except the people who die. They don't make any money. Anyway, a report slated for release this month reveals that the emergency response program projects can quickly slide into neglect after being transferred to Afghan control. Oh, really? Have you seen those videos? They usually wind up on the news somewhere of U.S. military personnel trying to train Afghan tribesmen who are still living in the 8th century how to be police officers? Is that funny as hell? And then they give them live ammunition? And what the U.S. military people, all the way down to like E-1s or whatever they're called now, privates. Well, these guys don't know how to read. They don't know how to read English? No, they don't know how to read Pashtun. They don't know how to add. So when we tell them, put a bullet in the chamber, they don't know what we're talking about. Projects quickly slide into neglect after being transferred to Afghan control. Gee, there's a shocker. We'll be right back.
To border and coast to coast,
he has his own
the
show.
Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
10 before the app is sponsored by Robin Horton, and he writes the Puget Sound. Peace Presence is a true peace organization and a new approach that is dedicated to making peace be present in the everyday lives of people living all around the Puget Sound and to create an effective political force opposing militarism, which is more rampant today than it was when the original peace communities first formed in the 1960s and 1970s. Thank you, Robin. Why are we in Afghanistan? The American people have no interest in being in Afghanistan. We make that clear in poll after poll. We have no interest being there. We have no business being there. We invaded Afghanistan 9 years ago, ostensibly because there were madrasas teaching young Afghan Muslims to hate America and come over here and kill, when in fact all of that was being engineered out of the Bush-Cheney White House. And if you want to go back, in the Clinton White House and the Bush 1 White House and the Reagan White House. Because, and you can keep going back, go back as far as you want, all the way back to Truman, because the United States made a decision with the establishment of the State of Israel not only to support the establishment of that state, which may or may not have been legitimate in terms of international law. I'm just going to leave it out there. Don't, if you're a supporter of Israel, don't jump in my case. If you, speak for the Palestinians, don't jump in my case. I'm leaving it out there. You make your own decision. If it was a legitimate move, the United States made an illegitimate decision, and that was to back completely the newly named Israelis. The Israelis. Interesting. And to turn our backs completely on the Palestinians, who were, as far as they were concerned, being pushed off their own land, thrown out of their own villages, murdered, burned, destroyed. And the United States said, we back Israel. Okay. From then all the way up to now, that attitude, and not just in that particular hellhole part of the Middle East, but all over the Arab-speaking world, that attitude has gotten us where we are. You know it. I know it. So now we're in Afghanistan. We're working with people who still can't get it through their heads that they're not, I said 8th century, that they're not living in the 10th century. What happened in Pakistan? What was it? An assassination today? Yeah, the assassination of the ruling party's governor of Pakistan's largest province, the Punjab. He was gunned down. Governor Salman Taseer was shot dead by one of his own elite guards while he was visiting Islamabad. The guard was apprehended and reportedly admits to the assassination to, quote, defend the honor of the prophet, end quote. The context of that is the dead governor's remarks calling for repeal of Pakistan's notorious blasphemy law, which came into sharp focus recently when a Pakistani Christian woman was accused of committing blasphemy against the Prophet Muhammad. Now, when you feel justified in murdering someone because that someone makes a comment about the irrationality of blasphemy laws. I mean, this sounds like a Christian fundamentalist in this country. This is another reason, writ large, why religion turns my stomach and should turn the stomach of any sane person on earth. But Pakistan, Afghanistan, all these stands, they're not interested in Western perverted values any more than we're interested in Islamic, that sort of Islamic perverted values, Sharia or whatever the hell it's called. I don't know. I don't care. Their insanity is no different from the insanity of the Inquisition. You can take Torquemada and dress him up in an Afghan robe and one of those hats and same guy. Different people to murder, torture, shame, belittle, stomp on because they say, hey, listen, I don't think we should have blasphemy laws that condemns a woman to death because fill in the blank. Repeat after me. I hate religion. Oh, wait, don't, because then dead blackbirds may fall all around your house. And if you have a stream behind your house, dead fish may pop up. When asked whether the Afghans have trouble sustaining these projects, the U.S. military issued a statement saying it does not have the information to provide an immediate answer. And in Washington today, the prosecutors decided not to press charges against the 136 anti-war protesters because someone had misplaced the complaint. Ooh, where is it? Is it over here? No. Is it over here? And in Afghanistan, the army says, well, we don't know why the Afghans have trouble sustaining these projects. We just don't have the information. Pretty incredible. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm Jim Cook.
Schenker writes, start the new year with strength, truth seekers, resist fascism, take to the streets, fight for your country while you can. Peace, Carolyn Buck in Canada. Thank you, Carol. Speaking of people outside the United States with astute comments, Der Spiegel, this is an alternate, Why Germans Think We're Insane. This is a good piece. Let me share it with you. It's written by, I don't know, but it was at alternate. As an American expat living in the European Union, I've started to see America from a different perspective. The European Union has a larger economy and more people than America does, though it spends less, right around 9% of GNP on medical, whereas in the, we in the U.S. spend close to between 15 to 16% on medical. The European Union pretty much insures 100% of its population. And they spend less than we do, of course. The U.S. has 59 million people medically uninsured, 132 million without dental insurance, 60 million without paid sick leave, 40 million on food stamps. Everybody in the European Union has cradle-to-grave access to universal medical and a dental plan by law. The law also requires paid sick leave, paid annual leave, paid maternity leave. When you realize all of that, it becomes easy to understand why many Europeans think America has gone insane. Der Spiegel has run an interesting feature called A Superpower in Decline, which attempts to explain to a German audience such odd phenomena as the rise of the Tea Party without the hedging or attempts at balance found in mainstream U.S. media. On the Tea Parties, Der Spiegel writes, the Tea Party, that group of white older voters who claim that they want their country back, is angry. Fox News host Glenn Beck, a recovering alcoholic who likens Obama to Adolf Hitler, is angry. Beck doesn't quite know what he wants to be. Maybe a politician, maybe a preacher, and he doesn't know what he wants to do either. At least he hasn't come up with any specific ideas or plans, but he is full of hatred. End quote. The piece, according to Aldernet, then continues with the sobering assessment that America's actual unemployment rate isn't really 10%, but close to 20% when we factor in the number of people who have stopped looking for work. Some social scientists think that making sure large-scale crime or fascism never takes root in Europe again requires a taxpayer investment in a strong social safety net. Really? Can we learn from Europe? Isn't it better to invest in a social safety net than in a large criminal justice system? Oh, by the way, in America, over 2 million people are locked down. Unlike here in the United States, in Germany, jobless benefits never run out. Not only that, as part of their social safety net, all job seekers continue to be medically insured, as are their families. Wow. Yeah, but look at Greece. Yeah, but look at Ireland, right? Ha, ha, ha. What about Spain? Portugal? Ha, ha, ha. In the German jobless benefit system, when jobless benefit one runs out, jobless benefit two kicks in. That one never gets cut off. The jobless also have contributions made for their pensions. They receive other types of insurance coverage from the state. As you can imagine, the estimated 2 million unemployed Americans who almost had no benefits this Christmas seems a particular horror show to Europeans, made worse by the fact that the U.S. government does not provide any medical insurance to American unemployment recipients. Europeans routinely recoil at that in disbelief and disgust. Yeah, but we always win the Super Bowl and the World Series. In another piece, the Spiegel magazine steps away from statistics and tells the story of Pam Brown, who personifies what is coming to be known as the nouveau American poor. Pam Brown was a former executive assistant on Wall Street, and her shocking decline has become part of the American story. To wit, American society is breaking apart. This is Der Spiegel. Millions of people have lost their jobs and fallen into poverty. Among them, for the first time, are many middle-class families. Meet Pam Brown from New York, whose life changed overnight. The crisis caught her unprepared. It was horrible. Ms. Brown remembers, overnight I found myself on the wrong side of the fence. It never occurred to me that something like this could happen to me. I got very depressed. Brown sits in a cheap diner on West 14th Street in Manhattan, stirring her $1.35 coffee. That's all she orders. It's too late for breakfast and too early for lunch. She also needs to save money. Until early 2009, Brown worked as an executive assistant on Wall Street, earning more than $80,000 a year, living in a six-bedroom house with her three sons. Today, she's long-term unemployed and has to make do with a tiny one-bedroom in the Bronx. She must have lived in Long Island. There's no such thing as a six-bedroom house in Manhattan that you can have for $80,000 a year, right? It's important to note that no country in the European Union uses food stamps in order to humiliate its disadvantaged citizens in the grocery checkout line. Even worse is the fact that even the humbling food stamp allotment may not provide enough food for America's jobless families. So it is on a reoccurring basis that some of these families report eating out of garbage cans to the European media. Quote, for Pam Brown, last winter was the worst. One day she ran out of food completely and had to go through trash cans. She fell into a deep depression. For many, like Brown, the downfall is a Kafkaesque odyssey, a humiliation hard to comprehend. Help is not in sight. Their government and their society have abandoned them. Pam Brown and her children were disturbingly, indeed incomprehensibly, allowed to fall straight to the bottom. The richest country in the world becomes morally bankrupt when someone like Pam Brown and her children have to pick through trash to eat. Abandoned with a callous disregard by the American government, people like Brown have found themselves dispossessed due to the robber baron actions of the Wall Street elite. And a shocking headline from a Swiss newspaper reads, "Hunger in the Land of the Big Mac." Though the article is in German, the pictures are worth a thousand words and need no translation. Given the fact that the Swiss virtually eliminated hunger, how do we as Americans think they view these pictures? Do you know a Pam Brown? I don't know a Pam Brown yet. Well, let me rephrase that. I'm not aware that anyone I know has to pick through garbage cans. I do know some people who are desperately trying to hold on. And so far have held on. Truly, when you compare what we do to our unemployed, our uninsured, and you compare it to our brothers and sisters in Europe, and I don't care where you're originally from, I don't care if you're South American, African, European, Australian, if you live here, you're an American citizen. It's just unbelievable that we can look to the East and see what they're doing, and then we look here and see what we're doing. I don't know. Take it away, Kathy.
You may be high, you may be low, you may be down, no place to go. But when the Lord gets ready,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Carol and Buck in Canada. Carol Schenker writes, "Start the new year with strength, truth seekers. Resist fascism. Take to the streets. Fight for your country while you can." Peace, Carol and Buck in Canada. Thanks, Carol and Buck. Alice at Heal and Hollers just sent an email. She writes, "This is Alice reporting in. Everything here in northern Arkansas is peaceful. No fish to jump over or dead birds falling on our heads. We have felt a couple of the over 500 earthquakes that have hit the little town of Guy, Arkansas since September. Guy is surrounded by dozens and dozens of the 38,000 gas wells that have been fracking across the center of the state since Cheney's Energy Commission exempted them from the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and the Superfund cleanup regulations." Of course, Cheney exempted them. Guy is also the site of several of the drilling fluid disposal sites. Once they frack the shale with sand and poison water to release the gas, they inject the drilling fluids, those precious, poisonous, non-body fluids, back into the earth. But we have all been reassured that this is in no way connected to the swarm of 500-plus earthquakes. Move along. Watch out for the birds. Also, between the birds in Beebe and the fish in Ozark, there is the nuclear power plant. Me? I'm just hanging out down here in the holler making salves and creams and such and hoping the rapture comes soon so the Christo-fascists will disappear from the face of the earth. Then maybe the birds will fly and the fish will swim again. From the holler, Alice. Our good friend Alice, someone who has sponsored this program for a long time. And I have to, you know, thanks, Alice. Thanks for reporting in. And I just have to mention her, the stuff she makes. It is just incredible. I don't know how she does it.
It's like miracle salad.
I don't know how she does it.
I have no earthly idea.
How
the
many
mom
times
is in the basement cooking up the medicine? That's all I know.
How many times, for real? How many times during the day, for real? That stuff she sent us as a Christmas gift. How many times do you see me in this horribly dry weather, rubbing that stuff on my hands?
Only when you steal it out of my nightstand.
No, 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 no. She sent that to me.
No, that is my special mojo. And
no.
You keep misappropriating.
Alice sent it to me.
No, she did not. Alice, if you're listening, you can right this horrible wrong.
Anyway.
But I love the cocoa mint lip balm that she did send us plenty of that to share. Molly will eat that stuff like it's crack if we put it in her, I found in her backpack. I can't let Molly have the cocoa lip balm because she thinks
she eats it.
Yeah, she thinks it's some kind of like gooey, you know, like those gummy things that you squeeze out of tubes kids do or something.
Not this kid.
She just keeps licking it. I'm like, God, you're going to rechap your lips. So the cocoa mint stuff.
You know, I
great.
Put that hemp based cream
the
on
hemp
my hands,
cream.
And
the lemon
Rusty,
hemp cream.
Rusty, our dog,
Rusty
comes over
lick it.
And just licks it and licks
like
it.
It's like heroin. I'm serious. Stuff's great.
And then he goes to sleep.
All
Alice,
hemp
thanks.
Oil, baby.
Thanks, Alice. Thanks for the report. I have an email.
All
here.
The young girls love Alice. How about Alice's restaurant?
I have an email here.
Get anything you want.
I have an email from Arthur in Winnipeg. And I think I should share it with you. It's from last night's show. And this is I think what he has is a frequent complaint from people who listen to this program. And so in fairness, I mean, Arthur wrote this email and, there's a bunch of PSs to it. Arthur, I'm gonna leave off the PSs, but the gist of his email is sort of that I don't treat callers to this program properly. And, you know, he may have a point. So when we come back after this break, I'll share this with you. Okay? All right, stay with us. We have more to go before we sleep. Third hour is pretty intense, or it will be, looking at what I've got here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone. I am a rock.
Brothers and my sister, all over this land. Ooh, 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 ooh. I had a bell, I ring it in the morning, ring it in the evening, all over this land. I ring out danger, I ring out a warning. About the love between my brothers and my sisters. Oh. Mm.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Ah, yes, 25 before the hour. Hello, almost fell asleep. All right, one more time. Well, more than one more time, but Carol and Buck in Canada are sponsoring this hour. Carol writes, start the new year with strength, truth seekers, resist fascism, take to the streets, fight for your country while you can. Peace from Carol and Buck in Canada. Before I do the email I said I wanted to do, this one, this is from Michael Job in San Francisco. He writes, hi, Mike and Kathy. Michael Job here on January 4th, 2011. That's today. I'm the veteran whose letter you read regarding my sad feelings around the lifting of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mailed a hard copy to President Obama yesterday as a follow-up to the email I had sent him. I'm off topic. I'm trying to call in but not have any luck so far. I want to let you know that the media did not report that 26 of us, not all veterans, were arrested in San Francisco for blocking the entrance to the federal building in a solidarity action with the Veterans for Peace in Washington, D.C. back on the 16th. This action was hosted by our Veterans for Peace chapter number 69, and several other organizations participated. We are still awaiting our fate. Michael Job in San Francisco. Well, with the dismissal of the charges in D.C., Michael, maybe the charges in San Francisco will be dismissed also. But you never know, right? All right, I got this from Arthur in Winnipeg. Hello to me. This is addressed to me. And he's talking about last night. He said, I called tonight at about 10:30 and was put on hold by Kathy. I said I wanted to talk about Michelle Bachmann and to wish you guys a happy new year. I didn't get on this time. And the last time I called, I waited 45 minutes and didn't get on either. Okay, I understand that you don't have to speak to anyone and you don't have to take my call and I don't have to call. I get all of that. These are the rules and I understand that. But at least you or Kathy could at least say either, no, we aren't going to put you on as you are boring, or sorry, we didn't get you on. I understand that first and foremost, you have a duty to your audience. I worked for a short time in broadcasting in the very early 80s before joining the Canadian Navy. I know you have to make money. I know as well you need to be interesting. But still, I thought this was rude. I know there are other callers who get on all the time, like that guy Steve, who, by the way, is very interesting, and I enjoy his calls. I just wish I could get my two cents in as well. Okay, I won't call anymore, and I really mean that. But we'll keep on subscribing to your podcast, as I think you are very intelligent, say things that make sense, and speak for me in ways I couldn't. I will also keep trying to get people to listen to your show and podcasts. I talk about your show whenever I get a chance. But it is very discouraging to think that my opinions aren't worth... aren't worth, and that I am not adding anything to the discussion. That kind of hurts, given that I have lived a life of experience, and at 52 would like to think I might be able to offer something worthwhile that people might want to hear, and this work airing. I'm not sure what that means, Arthur. I am sorry, but given this is the second time that has happened on my second call, I can't conclude anything else. Also, you didn't apologize for not getting to people on hold like you always do, so I can only conclude that my call didn't matter. That also hurt my feelings. Again, I understand this really doesn't matter, but I wanted to say it anyway. You are certainly your own man, and I know it doesn't matter what I think or say. I know you are the kind of man to tell people to take it or leave it. So if you have read this far in my email, thanks anyway. I chose to write you, by the way, instead of Kathy, as really I should be man enough to say this to you or not at all. I really seriously won't call anymore. I hate knowing that I am not all that interesting or worthwhile a voice, but that is life. Keep doing all that you do, Mike, and happy new year to you and Kathy and Molly. I really hope this year sees your show grow even more, and I will be plugging it whenever I can. I would not miss hearing the voice you offer that is the Mike Malloy Show. It is a real gem. Arthur, and his last name in Winnipeg. P.S. I'm not really trolling for an apology, so I just wanted to let you know that I'm not looking for one in the way I've written. Well, Arthur, I seriously do apologize. That has been a bad effect or habit of mine ever since I've been in talk radio. Well, not ever since. When I started in talk radio, they used to say that a talk show host like me should never talk longer than 2 minutes before you take another call, another call, another call, another call. And some talk show hosts do that. Maybe not that quickly, but this program is not caller driven. It's more like topic driven. And I don't know, Arthur, some nights I just get so wound up. I have people on hold and I see them on the screen and Kathy has put them on hold. I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, you know, time's going to run out. So I do apologize, Arthur. I hope you'll try again. The best thing to do, I guess, is to do what you've always done. Just wait until I say, okay, Kathy, let's take some phone calls. And the next time Arthur calls in from Winnipeg, I will take note and try to get you on. Okay? That's a fair complaint, you know, because it is a bad habit of mine. Linda in Phoenix writes, just wanted to wish you and Kathy Happy New Year. Also, hope this listener sponsorship is very successful, as I can't handle any more Nova M moments, you know, when we go out of business. Please don't disappear on us. I've been through enough this year. Also, would like to wish all my fellow listeners a better year as well, especially those of you who are going through extremely difficult times now. I'm sending good thoughts and energy to all of you. Despite this new Congress, I will continue to hope for the best. If that doesn't work, don't worry. I have a backup plan. I have voodoo dolls, and I will put a curse on them. Linda in Phoenix. So there you go. Linda is sending you some good energy. I didn't know what to make of the story the other day when it first came out about the Navy XO, executive officer, Cap Owen Honors. Well, he wasn't captain at the time. Well, I guess he was. The Navy has relieved him of command of the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise today for what is being called a profound lack of good judgment and professionalism. And what it's all about, I'm sure you know, are the very lewd and crude videos that were made to be shown to his crew on board the USS Enterprise. Honors is a former F-14 fighter pilot. He was considered a fast rising star. He was about to take the Enterprise on a 6-month deployment to the Middle East. Wartime command of one of the Navy's 11 carriers is a rare achievement and often is an indication this guy's, or whoever it is going to wind up, with, stars on his shoulders. So his career is effectively over. Admiral John Harvey, commander of U.S. Fleet Forces Command, said in a statement, quote, "The responsibility of the commanding officer for his or her command is absolute. While Cap Honors' performance as commanding officer of USS Enterprise has been without incident, his profound lack of good judgment and professionalism while previously serving as executive officer on Enterprise calls into question his character and completely undermines his credibility to continue to serve effectively," end quote. He's getting a lot of support from people who have served under him. There's a Facebook page was set up to record unofficial reaction. And one of the comments, having served under Cap Honors, then the XO, I was thankful for his attempts to lighten the mood, to be the butt of a joke, and show that officers are people too with a sense of humor, not some power on high that all enlisted men should look at with awe. Another sailor wrote, as a very proud former Enterprise sailor, I have to say something here for Cap Honors. I was on that deployment, and it was a tough one for my guys and I. We worked long hours in hard conditions, but we always made time for the whole shop to get together on Saturday night, sit down for a few hours to enjoy XO movie night. We were all always there, everyone that wasn't on watch. It brought us all together and made a bunch of knuckle-dragging, overworked engineers smile and laugh every time. This is not offensive. It is important for morale. He also got some anti-gay messages. My former brother-in-law, he's only former because my sister died, but my former brother-in-law was a lieutenant in the Navy. What was Ken on? The Eisenhower? USS Eisenhower? I forget. It was an aircraft carrier. I don't think it was the Enterprise. Was it the Enterprise? I don't remember. But Ken used to tell me about some of the hijinks and the craziness that went on board ship. Ken was in the Navy, two tours in Vietnam, and some of the stuff he used to tell us was pretty incredible. I don't know how to think about Navy Captain Owen Honors. We'll be right back.
Monkey-free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
And once again, the hour is sponsored by Carolyn Buck in Canada. Carol writes, start the new year with strength, truth seekers, resist fascism, take to the streets, fight for your country while you can. Peace. Carol Schenker, Carolyn Buck in Canada. And thanks, Carol. And thanks to Robin, who sponsored the first hour. When I first heard the story about Captain Honors, the Navy commander, he's only 49, 1983 Annapolis graduate. And when I heard, you know, I'm an anti-militarist to begin with, and I believe that so many people who are in the military are in there for the wrong reasons. And I also believe that if a country is going to have a military the size of ours, there should be universal draft, universal service, males and females, the Israeli model, not just Israel, but there are other countries. Man or woman, when you turn 18, you have an obligation to serve 2 years in your country's military. Now, that's with the caveat that if you're going to have a military, if you're going to have a military, I also believe that having a military staffed with actual men and women is insane in this day and age. It's just madness. In the first place, a military, I believe, is supposed to be defensive, not offensive. Isn't that what we're all about? Isn't that the promise we would never strike first or something like that? Or does that have to do with nuclear weapons, which is a lie because we're the only country that ever struck with nuclear weapons during a time of war? But if we're going to have a military, if we are going to have a standing Army, Navy, Air Force, then it has to be a universal draft. The way it's set up now, we have, 1%? What's the population? How many people are in uniform? 3 million? That would be about 1% of the population. I also said a couple of years ago that as long as we have a standing military and as long as we are in the business of invading other countries and doing war, then we should not have a commander-in-chief who has not served in an actual, if not combat situation, certainly in the military, for obvious reasons. I mean, this is not philosophical. This is for obvious reasons. If George, and I'm not talking about cowards and deserters like George Bush and Dick Cheney. I'm talking about people who actually served in the military, like John Kerry, even John McCain. I can't make the statement and then say, but not if they're Republicans. My point being that to have a military the size of ours now, starting the 11th year, or are we starting the 12th? No, the 11th year of the 21st century. This is madness. This is insane. I mean, what do we do with this military? Look, the eastern sun is rising, as the Chinese like to say. I think they like to say that. That's where the future is. And if we are concerned about confrontation with the Chi-Coms, having a military force is ludicrous. What we should have is what we already have. We have our nuclear weaponry, and we polish it up and shine it all up and make sure all the levers and gears and buttons work, and then get rid of our military force. We don't need it. What do we need it for? What's the purpose of it? Yada, 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 yada. But as long as we're going to have a military, it would just seem to me that there has to be universal conscription. And whether you like that or not, I mean, if you don't like it, then I think we should work against the idea of having anyone in uniform. How fair is it to have 1% of the population of this country bearing the burden and the horror of war? How fair is that? It's not fair. It sucks. You know it does. I know it does. We also know that our soldiers are not out there fighting for freedom, justice, and apple pie. What they're fighting for is capitalism and corporate America. That's the only reason that we have people in the military today. You know it. I know it. And I would imagine that most of the people in command and control situation in the various branches of the military also understand it. So I don't know. When I see a statement or a story like this one about Navy Captain Owen Honors, relieved of his command for lewd videos, is the way they're described. I don't know. I haven't seen them. I realize that you can see them online, but I really don't care. I figure when people are in a situation that sailors are in on board an aircraft carrier, as long as it's not violence against their fellow crew members, as long as it's not demeaning against their fellow crew members. I don't know. Maybe the videos were demeaning. Maybe they were terrible. Maybe Captain Honors losing his commission is the right and proper thing to do. I have no idea. I really don't. But I do know this, that if we insist on having a military, then it should be universal. Every American should serve in it for some period of time. Okay, we'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Hour three of the Malloy program. And this hour is brought to you by Eric Ellithorp. Sponsored by Eric Ellithorp. He has a serialized story that he wants you to look at. It's called America the Christen. Christen. C-H-R-I-S-T-E-N. The Last Days of Freedom. It is a story told through the pages of the daily government propaganda news release in a journal passed from person to person. It reveals the life in America under a Christian fundamentalist government gone insane. Now you can check this all out. Go to his website, SiteZero, SiteZero.org, SiteZero.org. Eric Ellithorp, our sponsor for this hour. Thanks, Eric. The USA Patriot Act was signed into law by the illegal and unelected President George W. Bush in October of 2001, a little over a month after the Bush crime family engineered attacks on this country that resulted in 3,000 deaths, the bombing of the Pentagon, the collapse of the Trade Towers, an airline crash actually shot down on orders of Dick Cheney in Pennsylvania. Now, to whatever degree you want to consider the Bush crime family responsible for that action on September 11, 2001, feel free. But they were responsible. They were responsible. 6 weeks later, Bush signs an act called so-called the USA Patriot Act, which actually was the Destruction of U.S. Civil Liberties Act. Now, I got a point in telling you this. I'll get to it in a second. But the part of what I want to talk about has to do with the hideous, not-so-subtle way corporate capitalist power in this country destroyed some constitutional guarantees by using the fear of terrorism. If Bush was anything, if the Bush crime family was anything, it was a front for corporate America to shred what remained in 2000 of accountability on capitalism, corporatism, with the regulatory agencies, with constitutional guarantees. The whole function, the whole purpose of the Bush crime family was to destroy that. It was started by Ronald Reagan, and 20 years after it was started, it hadn't completely affected what it was what it set out to do. It started in 1980. Seriously started. So George W. Bush was put in power in order to destroy the last vestiges of constitutional rights in this country. And of all the things that George Bush and his group of his gang of thugs did, the most effective thing they did was to destroy, undermine the few remaining constitutional guarantees that were still in effect. You know the history of the Bush crime family. I don't have to tell you this. So the Patriot Act was signed in October of 2001. The terrorist attacks engineered by Bush and company were September 11th, 2001. An entire act. You ever read it? You ever looked at it? Page after page. Gee, it almost makes you think it was written up before the Bush-engineered attacks on this country, doesn't it? I mean, a really suspicious person might come to that conclusion. The act reduced restrictions on law enforcement's agency's ability to search your telephone records, your email communications, your medical records, your financial records, anything about you that was off limits. And remember who was the only person that refused? Wasn't it Russ Feingold was the only senator that didn't sign on that? Am I right on that? Anyway, all of your privacy rights were ended with the USA Patriot Act being written into law, signed into law. Now, this is something that corporate and capitalist America and the police state, the national security state that we now live in, has been trying to put together for 80 years to bust into everything private about you, to get rid of this stupid-ass Fourth Amendment. Oh, my God, the right of the people to be secure in their papers, their home. What are you talking about? How can capitalism work with that goddamn amendment, right? So the Bush crime family engineered terrorist attacks in this country to put in place the USA Patriot Act, written up before the attacks occurred, and bring to fruition this desire by capitalist corporate America, the national security state, to end the last vestiges of privacy. And they did it. The act also expanded the authority of the government to regulate financial transactions. Your money that the right-wingers always, you know, they constantly want to talk about, well, it's your money. No, it's not. It may be your money. You may have temporary custody of it. But anything you do with it is now available to scrutiny. Anything. Anything. USA Patriot Act. The act also expanded the definition of terrorism to include something called domestic terrorism. Now, what was in domestic terrorism? Well, their definition of domestic terrorism, it enlarged the number of activities to which law enforcement powers can be applied. For example, strikes. Strikes! Union strikes can now be labeled as an act of terror. Protests. People gathering to exercise their First Amendment right, the right of the people to assemble, to seek redress from Congress. That can be considered an act of terror. Organized consumer boycotts, an act of terror. Job actions where people just get up and walk off the job for a day in order to protest, an act of terror. Depending on the industries that these actions are targeted. This all now can be considered domestic terrorism. And your ass or mine can be busted for it. And once you are charged with terrorism, good luck, Charlie. Good luck, Charlene. This is where we live. Opponents of the law at the time and subsequent to the signing criticized the authorization of indefinite detention, not just of immigrants. American citizens now can be indefinitely detained and can be legally assassinated. American citizens, well, most of them will have an Arabic surname, but they can be shot down in the street like a goddamn rapid dog. This is where you live, truth seeker. The law also authorizes searches through which law enforcement officers can enter your home or your business without your knowledge. Without your permission. And if they want to, without a warrant. The act also included the expanded use of so-called national security letters, which allows the FBI to search telephone, email, financial records without a court order. Oh, and the expanded access of law enforcement agencies, let's not forget, to your business records, including your library records. Remember that? And your financial records. All of this was accomplished by telling the American people that we were under attack by terrorists in an assault on this country engineered by the Bush crime family. That's part one. I'll give you part two when we come back. Stay with us.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day when all our rights will be taken away. Would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all these vultures in a field? What it feels like we're living in a police state. You broke the law, so accept your fate. They pull your car over.
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. And this hour is sponsored by Eric Ellithorpe, who has written a book, Serialized Story, told through the pages of the Daily Government Propaganda News Release and a journal passed from person to person. It all reveals life in America under a Christian fundamentalist government gone mad. You can check out what Eric has written. Go to his website, SiteZero, SiteZero.org. Eric, thanks for the sponsorship. Okay, part one, USA Patriot Act, written well in advance, obviously, of the Bush crime family engineered attack on this country on September 11, 2001. The whole damn thing was enacted, written, voted on, signed into law 6 weeks later. 6 weeks. You know what the act does? It criminalizes just about everything at the whim of government authority. Everything from strikes to protests to consumer boycotts. It is all considered suspect now. And it's all designed to take away your constitutional freedoms. First Amendment especially has been under attack. The Fourth Amendment, especially Fifth Amendment, the right to avoid self-incrimination, forget that. The right to a speedy trial, the right to hear the charges against you, gone at the whim of law enforcement. Gone. Oh, it's still in the books. The Constitution is still there. That's why it is just laughable that these rat bastard Republicans are going to stand in the well of the House and read the U.S. Constitution, none of which they respect or believe in. These are little dictatorial rat bastards who want to be run by, already are run by, want the country run by corporate America under any circumstances, any conditions. Stand in the well of the House and read the Constitution. You filthy hypocrites. You filthy, filthy hypocrites. Every last one of you Republicans. Hypocrites. But that's only part one. You know what part two is? Part two is the determination of a number of states now to try to destroy the labor movement. Where is the labor movement still strong, the union movement? Where is it still strong? Is it strong in the private sector? Please. Ronald Reagan started the anti-union movement. You know, it was bad enough that Reagan used to be a member of the same union that I'm a member of. And the son of a bitch turned spy. He reported to the FBI on what he considered to be, or what J. Edgar Hoover considered to be, illegal activities out there in Hollywood. Bunch of socialist communists. Ronald Reagan was a sneak. A sneak. I don't know, what's worse? A sneak? A liar? A hypocrite? But I digress. The area where the union movement is still the strongest, where it still exists at all, is in the public sector. School teachers, unionized government workers, whether they are state, county, municipal employees, federal employees, and they still wield some power, not much, but some, too much for these capitalist, corporatist Republicans. So, how to balance the state budgets that they totally screwed up in these various states? How to handle the state budgets, the red ink that these various states, I don't care where, from the south to the west, to the north, northeast, what's the thing to do? Well, according to these Republican governors, end public unions. Somehow that is going to take care of the mismanagement by the right-wingers in this country and the corporatists and the capitalists in this country. That's going to take care of it. You see, the nest of thieves and pigs and bastards that stole trillions from the financial services, the financial agencies, the banking, the real estate agencies, stole trillions. All of that ripples down to the state level, where state employees or state governments had investments in organizations that are now bankrupt. So, what are the states going to do? Oh, and by the way, and also in destroying the financial sector of this country, the capitalists also destroyed the tax base. If there's no value to anything anymore, how in the hell do you tax it? How do you raise money? That's the only way government raises money. It's through taxes. Even if they call them fees, they're still taxes. So what do you do? What do you do? Well, you got to find a scapegoat. And boy, have they found a scapegoat. Public labor unions. Front page of the New York Times this morning. And the way the Times wrote it over and over and over, Stephen Greenhouse, who wrote this, he might as well have been writing press releases from Wall Street. Over and over and over again, he presents the point of view of these Republican governors and their determination to smash public unions. Once or twice, he throws in a couple of comments by people like Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. I'll share this with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Who's taking away with his laptop and as he left, he called out to me. I'm in the Guantanamo. I heard the girls are sweeter there.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So the use of terror to destroy constitutional rights in this country, which was carefully engineered by the Bush crime family and its partners in capitalist America. You know, the Constitution of the United States is written is very tiresome and gets in the way to capitalist America, to corporate America. Corporations would much rather deal with a fascist government. That's why in the history of the United States, for the past 125 years, when we invade a country and murder its citizens and overthrow its government, we support a government to take its place, or one that's already in power, that is extreme right wing. Remember, capitalist America wanted to form an alliance with Hitler. In the run-up to World War II, fascists are what capitalism. That's the next step. Is what I'm trying to say. After capitalism, comes predatory capitalism, which is where we are. Then comes fascism. It's very simple. Damn it, this is not hard stuff. So destroying these pesky, illegal to corporate America, these illegal activities like the right. To assembly, the right to redress the government for grievances, the right to get together and protest. These are massive pains in the ass to capitalist America. They want them gone. So the USA Patriot Act. Second, now it's labor unions. As the Times said this morning, faced with growing budget deficits and restive taxpayers, officials from Maine to Alabama, Ohio to Arizona are pushing new legislation to limit the power of labor unions, particularly those representing government workers in collective bargaining and politics. Ah, in politics, to limit the power of labor unions in politics. That's all you need to know there. That whole sentence put together by Steve Greenhouse is a mishmash of garbage, except that part, to limit the power of labor unions in politics. Officials in these Republican states now, and they're just about all of them. This is becoming a fascist state. You know, you can read Chris Hedges, you can listen to Bob Alexander, you can read, just pick whoever. And if you read this stuff or you listen to this stuff, you don't pay any attention to it, you're crazy, or you have your head in the sand. Republican lawmakers in Indiana, Maine, Missouri, and seven other states plan to introduce legislation that would bar private sector unions, from collecting dues or fees from their members. They planned to reduce the flow of funds into union treasuries. In Ohio, this crazy bastard John Kasich wants to ban strikes by public school teachers. Some new governors in Wisconsin, you should hang your head in shame. Your new governor, Scott Walker, he's threatening to take away a government worker's right to form unions and bargain for contracts. This is what you have voted in Wisconsin. In the 2010 elections, Republicans won 7 more governor's mansions and won control of the legislatures in 26 states. That's up from 14. Now, many of the state officials pushing for these changes, the end to unions, say they want to restore some balance. We want balance, so what we decide to do is kill off the unions. That'll give us balance. They argue that unions have become too powerful. Well, if they're too powerful, how in the hell did the Republicans win all these state houses? They're liars. Two words about Republicans: cowards, liars. That's all you need to know. Charles Wilson, law professor at Ohio State University, said, in the long run, if these measures deprive unions of resources, it will cut them off at the knees. They'll melt away. They'll melt away. Oh, what a nice analogy with the planet succumbing to global warming. Melt away. Get rid of the unions. Oh, yes, indeedy. John Kasich, Republican of Ohio, according to Times, appears to be planning the most comprehensive assault against unions. He is proposing to take away the right of 14,000 state-financed child care and home care workers the right to unionize. He also wants to ban strikes by teachers. Kasich said in a speech, quote, if they want to strike, they should be fired. They got good jobs. What are they striking for? Uh-huh. Kasich also wants to eliminate a requirement that the state pay union-scale wages to construction workers on public contracts. You want to build a state building? Kasich wants to be able to pay you $6 an hour. The union says $25 an hour. No. Are you out of your mind? Drive the American worker into the ground. Continue to do it. Continue to do it as we build this neo-feudal fascist state. And John Kasich, one of the leaders. Kasich said he would like to ban the use of binding arbitration to settle disputes between the states and unions that represent government employees. No more binding arbitration. Do you know what that is? Look it up if you don't. But he wants to do away with that. With no binding arbitration, the state can say, okay, you're fired! And then hire desperate workers for half, a third. We've heard of this before. This is why capitalist America outsources jobs, outsources manufacturing. Don't you get it? When are you going to get off your ass and do something? When am I? The AFL-CIO's internal memo warned labor leaders, quote, with the enormous losses in state legislatures around the country, we will face not only more attacks on working families and their unions, we will face more serious attacks, particularly in the formerly blue or purple states that are now controlled by a Republican trifecta. And the memo points to, in particular, to 6 states, including, these are former union strongholds where Republicans now control the governor's mansion and both houses of the legislature. Listen, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Maine. Naomi Walker, the AFL-CIO's director of state government relations, said many voters would oppose these anti-union efforts. She said, quote, I think folks in these states are going to ask whether this is the right time to weaken unions when corporations are amassing more power than ever. She added, we've been fighting against privatizing Social Security and sending jobs offshore and to get the best deal for the unemployed. It would be a lot easier for Republicans if unions weren't there. Yeah. Yeah, it would. Social Security. Without unions, there wouldn't be any Social Security. There wouldn't be any Medicare or Medicaid. There wouldn't be any unemployment insurance at all. Nothing. Think about it. Think about it. There would be no civil rights. Who do you think busted their ass to get civil rights? After resisting them, yes. The union movement at one time, was very racist. And then it changed. Student grants, student loan programs. Who's responsible for that? Safety laws like OSHA. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Making sure that when you open a pound of hamburger, you don't find somebody's goddamn finger inside. Environmental laws. Wage laws. The right to collective bargaining. Do you know what collective bargaining brought to America, to the middle class? It created the middle class. Paid medical insurance, paid vacations, pensions, 40-hour work week. This is what capitalist America is destroying. This is what slime like John Kasich and Scott Walker, this is what they are just absolutely determined to destroy for once and forever. School lunch programs, women's rights. What about the Fair Labor Standards Act, which established a minimum wage, put in place child labor laws, time and a half pay for over a 40-hour work week? They want to destroy it! What are we doing about it? What are we doing about it, huh? What am I doing about it? What are you doing about it? Anything? Anything? Or are we going to just allow it to happen?
And all the work together we don't stand. There is power in a union. Now the lessons of the past we've all learned with workers' blood. The spikes of the bosses we must fight for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. War's always been the bosses' wiser.
Before the hour. You know, it is it's incredible how easily manipulated the American public has been. By the way, one more time, this hour is sponsored by Eric Ellithorpe. Go to his website, SiteZero, SiteZero, SiteZero.org. And there you will find a serialized story told through the pages of the daily government propaganda news release in a journal passed from person to person. It reveals life in America under a Christian fundamentalist government gone insane. The title of his serialized story is America the Christian, C-H-R-I-S-T-E-N, America the Christian, The Last Days of Freedom. Check it out, sitezero.org. Eric Ellithorpe. Eric, thank you. The ease by which this country has been moved away from representative government, representative democracy, participatory democracy, call it what you want, and into a form of neo-feudalism that still has a ways to go before it accomplishes what it has set out to accomplish, but it's getting closer and closer. But the ease with which this was done, if you remember several years ago during the Clinton years, the Project for a New American Century was put together and advocated, advocated in order to bring about what was necessary to turn this country into a complete corporatist state. It advocated another Pearl Harbor, said that's what this country needed, another Pearl Harbor. We needed to be attacked so that the real power that now runs the United States of America would have an excuse to institute changes, get rid of some of these pesky individual liberties and freedoms. So guess what? Ta-da, ta-da! When Clinton wouldn't go along with it, all they had to do was wait, just wait a couple years. Yep, here it comes. Kaboom. The Bush crime family engineered an attack on this country on September 11, 2001. Now, by using the word engineered, I don't necessarily mean they sat down with a bunch of dupes who happened to have Arabic names and planned it. They didn't have to. The Bush thugs didn't have to plan anything. All they had to do was sit back and let it happen. A country like the United States that spends, how much have we spent since the end of the so-called Cold War? Since the end of World War II, what have we spent? Trillions, tens of trillions. How much? Who knows? On, quote, defense, end quote. And yet 19 guys with box cutters are able to bring down a republic. Right. With no help from the inside, of course. With all systems on alert, sure. With astute leadership in the United States designed to protect and defend, abso-goddamn-lutely. Everything was in place, only not the way you think it was, truth seeker. So, that ended the pesky freedoms. That began the beginning of the ending of those pesky freedoms. And now, one last nail to drive into the coffin. Get rid of the unions. How do you do that? Create a financial crisis that is pushing the country to utter, absolute, complete bankruptcy. Unless you're in that top 1%, open up the New York Times. Look at the ads on page 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. Down the sides of the paper, look at the ads. $3,000 pocketbook? There it is. Grab it, booby. $6,000 top coat? Woohoo! $90,000 ring? You betcha! But for the rest of us, the destruction, the change, the metamorphosis is just about complete. Just about complete. Unions have got to go. Those pesky, filthy public unions. So put the country on the verge of bankruptcy. Put the states, the counties, the cities, the townships on the verge of bankruptcy. And then find a scapegoat. Who's the scapegoat? Well, of course! Those dirty, rotten unions! What does the governor of the state of Indiana say?
Well, you know, we have industry who wants to come here. They really do. But unless we're a right-to-work state, you know, where there is no unionization of workers, they're going to go someplace else. Like, oh, I don't know, Vietnam.
And we poor stupid Americans, those of us who
who believe that, and apparently we're in those people who believe this story, are in, if not a majority, it's a huge plurality of Americans. And the rest of us, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing to fight? What are we doing to resist? Jesus Christ, we can't even organize ourselves to stop buying for one damn day. We can't even do that. Okay. But you do understand what's happening. You do understand what's happening. You do. You have to. You have to understand it. And again, the question is the same as it's been on this program for the past 8 or 9 years. What are we going to do about it? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.